I went to Adidas Nations going into my senior year after I just came off a phenomenal junior year. I put the world on notice this year, but still I ain't getting that recognition and whatnot. I go to Adidas Nation and...
This is a camp, I take it.
This is one of the top camps in the world. Here in LA, this is the crazy part. I'm in LA and at this camp, me there for 4 days. When I got going into the season, I came here and wreaked havoc because nobody knew me. It was only one person that knew me because he was in my conference, and it was Isaiah Cannon, which is one of my close friends. He was the only person that knew me because me and him were the top dogs in our league. So he knew who I was. Oh, and my boy Ed Daniel. So it's three of us.
And
they
these,
knew.
These are from
Adidas Nation. They went to Murray State.
Okay. Murray?
Yeah.
Okay, okay, okay.
They knew who I was because they battled me for the last 3 years. Yeah. Nobody else knew me. Not even the people that, the coaches, the nobody. When it came out, going into the senior year, after that camp, I went from being unknown to one of the top 10 power forwards in the country. In the country for every school.
That's crazy.
And I was number 6.
That's crazy.
So I go.
You went crazy at the camp.
Y'all telling me that.
Super crazy.
You went crazy at the camp.
Oh,
sure.
I showed everything. And they was like, hold on, who the hell is this kid? So going into my senior year, I'm starting to see my name, mock drafts, late first. The highest I was 18. Guess where I was going to? The Bulls. And you had me like, oh.
Going to the crib.
Like, my dad had this stuff screenshotted, my mom. Yeah. All my family was sending me like, yo, like, man, all that recognition. So starting into my senior year, things don't really happen because we had a coaching transition. My coach that was one of the assistants, he became the head coach, changed the whole narrative. We had the same team. We went to the OVC championship. We lost by 2 points because we got cheated. Lost by 2 points. We had the same team. All we had to do was keep our same dynamic, but he wanted to change everything. As he said, he wanted to keep his own DNA. We had the team. Like, we literally had the team to go back to the championship. Messed all that up. We playing Middle Tennessee State, December 17th, 3 days after my birthday. We're getting our ass whooped against this team. When we make a run, they make a run. The closest we got was 18. The highest deficit we was facing, 34. Like, coach, it's game over with. Like, take us out, like, let's... We gotta get ready for. He was like, "Nah, we ain't gonna throw in the white flag, coach. We not winning this game. Put the guys that's not playing in. Nah. 49.8 seconds. We still in the game. We down 22. I just go randomly just try and set the screen. This dude drops his shoulder right into my knee." Right into my knee. My knee went just like this. I felt the snap. Instant hit. Oh, it's over with. I fell. Knee throbbing. Tore my meniscus. Draft stock went from damn near lottery, non-existent. They told me I was going to be out 8 weeks. Me being mentally strong, came back and forth. My body healed because it was like, it's a purpose. Like, nah, I'm not finna do this. You didn't work yourself up for this moment. Nah, I ain't finna. So they wrote me off. They said, nah, he ain't gonna be able to do it. Da da da. I can't. I got hurt December 17th. I was back January 31st. January 31st, I was back. I played 6 games at the end of my senior year. In them 6 games, I did enough. So now we get a champion. We get into conference. We lose to Belmont, which go on to win the conference. And I'm like, all right, so now I'm starting to prepare for the draft. Like, everybody's like, oh, no, I signed with this small agency. that it wasn't getting done. So this is when I knew like the politics of stuff, politics of the business. Mm-hmm. You had a white agent, you had a black agent. I was with the black agent. They had another player, Nate Walters, with the white agent. Now Nate Walters is at all the IMG, the fancy facilities, everything. Me, they sent me to Atlanta to go work with this rinky dink trainer. I literally went to this trainer and I literally was playing against competition. I could tell these dudes exactly what I'm about to do and still be able to do it. I'm not getting better here. And you talking about I'm preparing for the draft? The agent that I was with, this man told me, he was like, man, because of where you went and the things that are up against you, I think we got to get you between 18 to 20 workouts. I said, are you out your fucking mind? So, I'm like, nah, that don't sound right to me.
Sound crazy.
Sound right? It's 30 teams. You talking about 18 to 20?
Yeah.
Nah. You need to sit up here and figure out what, who needs what and what situation I would fit best in. Yeah. Those are teams I need to go work for. Because even if I don't get drafted, I still put the bug in the ear.
Yeah.
So I'm in the process of, like, I end up firing him. The reason why I fired this man, I found out through Twitter, I got invited to the draft combine through Twitter.
That's wild.
I was a late entry because some people dropped out. So I'm like, he calls me later, hey man, what's up, man? I got good news. I'm like, what's up?
You don't follow me?
He's like, what's up? He's like, I'm like, what's up? He was like, no, let's meet for dinner. Da da da. I wanna hand it to you. I'm like, okay. So we go to dinner. He was like, man, what's up, dog? I just wanna tell you, man, like, it's a great day. I'm like, what's up? He's like, huh? So I open the letter, read it. I was like, oh, I already knew that. He's like, huh? I seen that 3 hours ago. Before you called me, I seen that on Twitter. That's when I knew, that was second strike.
Yeah.
Then once all this other stuff go, you fly literally, when I go to the combine, you fly your whole team out. And I'm in the process of like transitioning and they're trying to get me or whatnot. So they were starting to rack up charges and everything. Like, then they try to get me to pay for it. I didn't tell y'all to come to the combine. I didn't tell none of y'all to. And you think that I'm finna pay for this? That was it. So I literally went to combine, got back on the map. So people like, oh shit, I went with the fours. They like, oh, he can shoot. He versatile, like he can do this. I sit up here and I get to doing the testing and stuff. I do the stress echo test, man. My test come back red flag. So I'm like, what the hell does that mean?
Stress echo test, is that for like
That's the running test, where you running on the treadmill and it's the incline.
Got it.
I'm like, they talk to the doctors. It's 8 doctors come talk to me.
Got it.
They was like, yeah, son, I don't think you should play basketball no more. I'm like, what you mean? They was like, yeah, your test came back red flag. I'm like, what you mean? They was like, well, from what that means, you got an enlarged heart. And you, like, that's a warning, and that's a precautionary thing for basketball because at any moment, you can drop.
Dude in Boston, what was his name? Reggie Lewis, Lynn Bias.
Yeah.
Listen, one of my close friends did the same thing, died for Grand Rapids. Just drop. So I'm like, oh, shh. So now basketball is like, that just got taken from me. Like, with no, something didn't sit well with me. Something just sit well. Everybody around me is like devastated. But I'm like, my agent called me. He was like, man, how you feeling? I said, I'm good. Like, you know, it just wasn't meant to be. Like, nah, man, it just don't, something just don't feel. I said, don't, but I don't, what can I do? Like, you can't mess with that. He was like, nah, I can't, it just don't sit with me. So I went and got a second opinion.
Yeah.
Turns out the machine I was on was broken.
Oh,
I thought he knew the coach.
Seventh grade coach,
I got old machine.
The machine was broken. The person that was on it before was too big, so it was fucking up the calibration very bad.
So you supposed to be here, period.
Period.
You supposed to be
so here. I literally go, combine, the draft is in 3 weeks. For 2.5 weeks straight, I was working out for teams. Every other day I was in a different city. I had 10 workouts. Every other day I was in a workout. Tired than a motherfucker. But I went through every workout and did my thing. So come draft night, my last workout was the day of the draft in Cleveland.
Do you feel leading up to that evening, do you feel like your name's gonna be called? Because it's only two rounds, right?
It's two rounds, 60 players. Rounds.
Did you feel like your name was gonna
be called? I thought that I would. And then this is the ironic part. So the day of the draft, I'm sitting here with my family. My family threw me a draft party. My agent heard a lot of good news and everything, but I'm still skeptical. Like, I don't know. It just, like, all the things is up against me. And I'm at this point, like, that's when I'm starting to weigh in on, like, man, maybe I won't get drafted. Da, da, da. So the first round goes. Second round starts.
Do you know who got picked that year in the first round?
Yes,
like,
I do.
Who's the top pick that year?
Anthony Bennett.
Anthony Bennett from Cleveland. He's from
Toronto.
Canada. He's from Canada. Yeah.
Fuck the whole.
Play for Cavs though.
Like, messed the whole draft up.
Yeah, he did.
Messed the whole draft up.
He ain't. Did he play? It don't matter. Anyway.
Listen. Go ahead. Messed the whole draft up.
So listen though, with all of that said, again, you're here. You're sitting here, and it's due to resolve. You know what I mean? Like, you have this resolve. You have this resiliency.
That's why I got it tattooed on my finger.
You're in an industry that, you know, like the music business, I think film and television, you have these dynamic personalities, right, that run these studios, or in your situation, you know, Rob is the guy, right? He's got the big deal.
For sure.
How have you been able to, like, he's been able to stay in the league 10 years. You've been, like you said, this is year 11, right?
Yeah.
What are the things that you hold close to you so that you can navigate, you know what I mean? Navigate and stay in, because you got to stay in the game, right? To create opportunities.
For sure. I think on a small, like, surfacey level, when it came to ridiculousness, I'll start there. For me, I looked at it and I became a producer season two, because season one I was there and I'm just a person, I'm gonna be around some shit. I wanna know how it's working. I wanna be able to add to it. I wanna be able to say, hey, we should do this thing versus this thing. Early on, we wouldn't even watch the videos. I don't watch the videos anymore. I haven't watched them in like 6 years probably now. But early on, when we were trying to figure out the show, we weren't watching videos or anything. We were just kind of literally freestyling, going out there freestyling. And I told Rob, like, yo, I don't think on ESPN they watching it and being like, back, back, back. Yeah, that shit went out. Yeah, it really went out. Like, I think they kind of know beforehand what's going on. I think it might help us a little better to be a little better prepared for it. He was like, I don't know. It might take away the organicness of what we got going on. I was like, maybe. And tested it out one day. I asked him, could I get the clips beforehand? Because I'm also controlling the clips. People think for whatever reason it's fake, but I'm really controlling the clips. But I asked him beforehand. I came in the next day, I murdered, killed it. And he was like, all right. From there, I became a writer on the show, season two as well, just to like help with the comedic timing and different things. I was like, oh, this could be funnier. I would write him jokes. He would always joke with me and say, if you come to a tape and they're like, you just use your laughs under my jokes anyway, so we don't fucking care. But for me, I was like, it's about playing a role in any of it. You know, that's what sports does for you, is allow you to go into any situation and be like, all right, what role, what hole can I fill? Wow. Like, you know, if you're talking about television and film, I just signed my production deal with Paramount Plus. I look at it and I'm like, okay, well, from a streaming standpoint, anything I want to do, I'm going to fucking you know, really become a student of it. So I'm like, from a streaming standpoint, I look at Netflix, I look at Hulu, I look at these different things and say, well, we got to fill these holes of like, what's working over here? If it's dating shows, if it's this, if it's that, like, okay, well then I should be writing things along those lines that I can produce things that I know will fill these holes. So it was the same thing with Ridiculousness. I was like, you know what? You guys aren't using my long-winded stuff. I'm probably gonna be better if I find moments in this, if I find little moments and say, okay, well, let me stop on this little moment and I'll have a joke, a little small joke right here, or give you a zinger, as he'll say, a little zinger, because I know that you'll have to keep me in, and you'll have to keep me into the edit because I'm doing these quick jokes that are hitting hard versus this long-winded thing. So I think in any of it, it's just about looking at the market and looking at holes and say, okay, well, if I'm gonna keep doing this, what are people lacking, or what storytelling, what story is adding to it? Because in all of it, the fans now and the consumer now and the audience now, they can see bullshit. It's they have too much access to us to not be able to see bullshit. So it's just about being yourself and seeing how you can tell that story the best way possible, for me, honestly. Yeah,
and to your tool belt too.
Yeah.
Every year. That's crazy. So, question, are y'all sweeping the Lakers this year?
That's the plan. Like,
you excited about this upcoming year, man?
We start off with them, so you know what's gonna happen with the amount of it.
Is that in a week?
Yeah.
Next Tuesday, right?
Yeah, it's a week today.
I always know it's like close to Halloween is the beginning of the NBA season.
I mean, now that they didn't move it up, yeah, and you know the anticipation of what they sitting there talking about. They like, who gonna be the king of LA? Like that, they trying to set the foundation early. So,
yeah.
I mean, we know we gonna be ready. So it's just a matter of when we come out, that opening night, we set the tone from the tip.
I think y'all better team for sure.
Yeah.
That's unbiased opinion. I actually believe they're a better team for sure.
On paper, we much more dynamic and we have much more like arsenal like than a lot of teams, and that's what's gonna make us that much scarier than everybody.
Going into your 10th year, who have been a few of the players that have really like again wrapped their arms around you and been like, you know?
Whose rookie are you?
Man, my rookie year, I was Dwight Howard and Francisco Garcia, James Harden, Ronnie Brewer.
I used to love Ronnie Brewer. Yeah.
But the guy that really took me around, like, and really taught me a lot was Francisco Garcia. Like, he was the first one that kind of gave me that foundation, like the ins and outs of the league. And
what team was this?
Houston.
Rockets. Okay, yep, the Rockets. Houston. Okay.
So he was him first. Then when I got to Philly, it was Jason Richardson, Carl Landry.
Jay Rich.
Yep.
Jay Rich. I just hooped with Jay Rich at District.
Man, and seeing him still doing what he's doing at his age is like,
he nice?
Silly. He ain't seen him in Big Three. Like,
yeah, Jay Rich,
Jay Rich still punch.
Michigan State boy, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
But yeah, then after that, I became the vet in my third, fourth year. Like, I was one of the oldest people on the team.
Who was your rookie?
Jahlil Okafor, TJ McConnell, Embiid, Ben Simmons, who else? Dario Saric, Tim Luau Cabarro.
Yeah, I seen that year too. I like that team.
That
team was nice.
Yeah. Man,
Jahlil.
Yeah,
when he came from Chicago, like the league changed on him.
He was more traditional.
But
back
score,
against,
yes, no defense yeah. though. But can score Duke, that thing like a month.
Yeah, he
listen,
was
when
it
I say
Duke.
If he would have been in the 2000-2010 area, he would have been a problem.
Yes, a problem.
Yeah,
but the way that the game transitioned, it was like he wasn't able to keep up.
Yeah.
He was a step too late. And when I say had, I watched one of the greatest battles in practice once. Like, Joel Embiid versus Jahlil Okafor for 10 minutes straight. Them two, we playing 5-on-5. They went at each other for literally 10 minutes.
Yo, I heard the practices be crazy.
What? Listen, I had never seen a battle. It was literally to the point where we would literally bring the ball up, throw it in the post, everybody space.
damn, like we watching this Clash of the Titans.
That literally is exactly what it was. Because you got to think, number three versus number three.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally, three versus three.
Yeah.
They basically had to establish who was going to be the guy. Mm-hmm. And when I tell you, I was like, man, for 10 minutes straight, dog, we literally watched this practice go. Act like we in the play. Throw right to the post. One-on-one.
You can tell this dude is a big sports fan.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's nice, man? I'm trying to come at me like that, man. I'm nice out there. Nah, I'm joking. I was going to do, because I'm a person who's a dreamer as well. As a joke, I was talking about doing a fake year of me just shooting a fake documentary of me going to the league, trying to put my name into the draft. I know I'm going to make it. But the whole point of it was to just show people that you can do anything you want to do in life. Anything you want to do in life, exactly, man. Yeah. I'm nice like that.
But like I said, it's year 10. I've seen a lot of great players, play with a lot of great players.
But who's like just throwing their arms around you, taught you a lot?
You know what I mean? You know you can pick up the phone and call them, and the advice that you're going to get on that on the other end of the phone is very sound and very...
Is there a coach that you have like that during your NBA span that you like, oh, that he was probably the best mentor? Yeah. Even
Lloyd,
if it wasn't
Lloyd Pierce is the person that made me who I am in the league, because
a strong
Brett Brown gave me when I got to Philly. Brett Brown told me, he was like, son, you can shoot the lights out of the ball, but if you can't guard nobody, you ain't gonna stick in this league. And for literally 3 years, me and Lloyd was my player development guy. For 3 years straight, Lloyd turned me into the defensive player I am. Mm-hmm. By the drills, the work ethic, the film sessions, the amount of people that he had me watch. I watched Scottie Pippen, Kawhi,
that's a great film.
Danny Flash. Green, Bruce Bowen, Matt Barnes, who else was great? Sean Marion, All these great defenders. All these great
and
defenders.
All like your size 6'7", 6'8".
Exactly. Yeah.
Long.
Exactly.
Yeah. Intentional with the training.
Like, they knew I had great hand speed, but literally, the guy that helped me take my anticipation and my instincts to another level is our trainer, Ty Wright. It started in the weight room and transitioned on the court. Literally every day, we watch film, and then we would do something to simulate game-like situation. Whether it's me guarding for X amount of seconds, then run to the corner and go to three. Or going the length of the court, like doing a down and back, and then come and shoot a couple of threes. Then have to go guard him in a certain setting. Then I got to run on the other side. Like just simulating like game-like situations. That's what made me who I am. And for 3 years straight, that was our routine. When he left, it was like the next coach that stepped up, he tried to fill that void. Now you can't fill that void. Like... you can't.
Not to cut you up. So you, same thing, like, you know, again, you came in with Rob, right? Mm-hmm. This unexpected phone call, this mm-hmm. blessing. And now season 11, and again, who is it? Because I'm sure you're trying to, you know, you're growing a vertical. You're growing the IP. You're growing as a man. Who are you talking to? I'm sure your parents, but who are you talking to outside of that to help you to make sure that you know, you're doing the right things, you're staying true, you're staying authentic, you're building correctly?
Like an A&R, I'm probably always sourcing, depending on the situation. I'm probably saying, okay, well, this person is probably more versed in this situation mm-hmm. than this person. So,
couple people?
Yeah, like, so Rob somebody. Mm-hmm. I know I can always, if it really got real TV and film, Mike, I can always call Mike B. Jordan. Like, I know like different people I could pull on to be like, all right, I gotta, but I feel like I just pick up everybody. You know, for me, like that's more of my style. My therapist, I use her a lot, but.
Shout out therapy.
Sure. My girl, but my parents are definitely still probably those foundations for me. Like my dad is somebody I know I could call my brother again, somebody I know I could call and they're the ones that are gonna hold me accountable and be like, you know, and they don't always necessarily have insight on different business things. Chad Easterling, somebody I know I can call as well, one of my really good friends, if it's some business stuff. So yeah, it just depends on the thing. Yeah, if it's art, if it's this, if it's that, it's just a different person.
By the way, he got the most fire art collection. He's my art muse, like.
That's right. Who I need to talk to for when I get my crib. Like,
right here.
I got you.
Right here.
I promise. I want to make a whole black fund for art. I promise. Yeah.
We got to put him and Khalil together.
No, seriously. Like, I watch and he puts me on. Like, I'll go and I've learned about so many new up and coming, especially black artists from him.
Didn't even know that. I appreciate that. That's what I'm doing it for.
We had a Khalil Kinsey on.
Okay.
The Kinsey Collection, which is on exhibit at SoFi right now. That was, curated by the parents and Khalil, who's one of our boys from out here in LA. But you guys should definitely know each other, because that's another thing that happens on here usually, is we've been building community, like just people meeting each other and then relationships developing. And it's like, hey, we should do this together. So I'm glad. Yeah, we should definitely introduce you to Khalil. Also, you spoke about therapy. We talked about that right before the camera started rolling. For you, therapy and why? Why is it so essential to you?
Well, I joked and said that earlier, that just from us being black in this country, we need therapy. Just from all the hurt that we've went through to understand a lot of things. It's all about just you working through things. Like we said, like, it's going to the gym for your brain. So it's like that mental exercise you need, but it's understanding why you process things certain ways. It's understanding why you are certain ways. It's different generational curses that you may not even understand, that you may be trying to break. And like, so for me, just to be able to talk those things out with someone that's not biased and be like, oh, okay, I know that this is from a pure perspective of being like, hey, well, could that thing make you feel this way? Being able to feel as well. I think us being black men within America, a lot of times we're not taught how to feel.
Yep.
Like to simply to be able to process emotions and stuff. You look at it as a sign of weakness almost, you know, as you grow up as a kid. Like my dad, I remember him not crying until I was, I think, 13 years old. My grandma passed away. And that was my first time I saw him cry. And I saw him cry again when he got saved over again. And I was like, this nigga doing this nigga. I was thrown off by this nigga. I was like, this nigga lied to me all these years. Like, nigga could process tears. But for me, to like, I'm able to live in this sacrifice. I'm able to live in a way more free space than my parents was and my dad was. So I think therapy has helped me understand even, you know, I joke with him and say, you know, we do essentially live. You do live forever. You live forever through me. I'm just trying to be a better version of you. The more and more I look at you, I'm like, oh shit, I'm just you. I see what you fucked up right there and right there. If I could do this thing different and do this thing over here, I'd probably be a better version of you. So I think therapy just allowed me to really tap into all that stuff and to also realize when you've hurt people as well. And like, and being
hurt
able
people,
to
hurt people.
Yeah, right? For sure. And then, you know, and I don't think I always process things as hurt people. I was on my podcast not too long ago, and I know me, myself, having the mouthpiece I have and being like a comedic dude, I probably hurt a whole bunch of people in high school and shit. Just from being funny, roasting motherfuckers. But to the degree, I'm like, man, you just didn't process a lot of these things the way that you would now. So I think it's just helped me become a better version of myself.
Self-realization.
So therapy for you?
Saved my life, dog. Like, 2019 is the first time I really realized like all the stuff that I was carrying. Like, we all familiar with the movie Get Out, right? Mm-hmm. Chris, when that lady sat up here and took that thing and she did it, and he fell into that trance. I felt like that, like, and I felt like I couldn't get out. Like, everything was going wrong. My relationship at the time was rocky. I just got traded to Minnesota after Philly told me, you're a vital part to this organization, you're part of our future. They traded me 3 weeks later. Then, once I get there, I make immediate impact on this team, Minnesota. We go 22-8 before I get hurt. I got hurt New Year's Eve, New Orleans. So I'm working my way back, bone bruise. I don't know what bone bruise is. I'm thinking that we get bone bruise all the time. We keep pushing, but it's days I can't walk. Like, I get out the bed, I'm like, the hell?
Yeah.
And I literally can't walk. Like, I had to literally get my way to my car, like, take my dog out, everything. They gave me a target return day, March 14th. It's March 2nd. I go down to G League for 3 days. I go down to G League 3 days. I have phenomenal 3 days. I'm looking like back to myself. I go home to my ex, and it was my ex's son's birthday. And I went home because the team was on the road. And I literally, they was like, don't do nothing. Just put on your sleeve, relax, don't do nothing. I do exactly that. I did overboard. I did recovery. I had my Normatec. I had my game ready. Took all this stuff with me just to be precautionary. I go back home to Minnesota 2 days later, once the team back. I wake up next morning, my knee is like this. I can't even see my knee. Swelling, everything. I'm like, yo, what the fuck? So I go to the trainers, everybody panic, like, man, what the fuck did you do like that? I ain't do nothing, I told y'all what I did. Y'all literally just FaceTimed me at home, sitting on the couch with my knee sleeve on and my fucking Normatec and game ready on. So they was like, all right, so then I had to go get an MRI. My first MRI didn't tell me nothing because there was too much fluid in there. So they drained the fluid, and got another MRI. Before they got the MRI, my knee swelled up during the MRI. So then they had to drain my knee again. Then they had to put this plasma in my knee, which burned like hell. To find out what exactly was wrong. And come to find out, I tore my meniscus again for the third time, same knee.
Shit.
So I'm like, so they was like, all right, yeah, you done for the season. I'm like, mind you, all this other stuff going on. Mind you, me and my mom was into it over the situation I was in. It was rocky, you know, we didn't have our moments of so much stuff from the previous season in Philly. So it's a lot of stuff. Plus trying to figure out my ex, like her next step and what she wanted to do, because she stopped working. She was a bottle girl before and she stopped working. She wanted to do something else because there was an incident to happen. And I'm like, look, that ain't it no more. Like we gotta figure out the next steps in life. So trying to help her figure out then when my other people, like my homeboys and my other family members, like carrying everybody else's burdens. That's my biggest attribute and that's my biggest flaw, is that I try to carry everybody's burdens and try to be the problem solver for everybody.
Yep.
And sometimes you can't do that. And with me dealing with all the stuff I was dealing with in turn, like all I just felt like this. Cup is empty, trying to pour into others and none of that stuff set up for me. It got to a point where like mentally I was gone. Like, and I was so far gone that my ex's son used to bother me. And he ain't doing nothing being a child. He running in the house, playing around, doing his stuff. It got to a point where I didn't even want them around. I sent them home. When I had surgery, April 1st, I had nobody around me. I'm on crutches. And I got a big ass fucking dog that's 122 pounds.
Jesus.
That I'm taking out on crutches, walking. But the one thing that I can say about this process, my dog knew something was wrong, and my dog didn't make it hard for me at all. I could take this mug out on my crutches. I didn't even have to put him on a leash. He never left my side. Whenever I'm on the couch, laying down by my side, in the bed, sitting on my side of the bed, never left my side. I'm sitting up here like, man, it's just something don't feel right.
That's what's crazy.
They do. And so when I did all that, it got to a point where the incident happened before when I told y'all that, you know, before I had the surgery, is I went into the office and I told him like, hey, I feel bad. I'm not feeling too good today. Like, I just want to get in, get out, get my, they didn't listen to me. That's when I snapped. So I had a talk with my coach at the time, and he was like, man, you know, I understand what you're going through. Something you're going through a lot. Like, I can tell just by your demeanor you've changed. So he was like, he recommended therapy, Ryan Saunders. And I'm like,
Flip Saunders, his son.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So I'm like, therapy is what's going to do for me. But it's like series of events kept happening to the point where it's like, all right, I can give this a try, but if it don't work, like, cool. I'm still going to be in the same spot. Like, and I figure something else out. But if it do, that's a plus. So literally I go to talk to this therapist. They know this man from Can of Paint. I couldn't even look this man in the eye. That's how much weight I was carrying. I'm looking down.
How much
down.
Pain you in?
I couldn't even look this man in the eye.
Because we don't want to cry, right? Yeah.
Couldn't look this man in the eye.
Fight this nigga, man.
So all of this stuff that's going on, like, I couldn't look this man in the eye. And we literally, it's supposed to be a 1 hour session. That shit turned into 4.5 hours. I unpacked so much, and I didn't even realize half the stuff I was dealing with. It go back to childhood. The relationship I had with my real father, the relationship I had with the people that I grew up with, the surroundings I had, like being an introverted kid and like being scared all the time, like you used to have to fight for no reason. It's to the point where I used to get chased home from a new environment. My mom seen me running home one day to a point where she told me, look, what are you running home for? I was like, man, they trying to jump me. She said, if you don't stand your ground, she's like, you got two choices. Either you stand there and get your ass whooped, or you gonna come home and get your ass whooped. Which one you think gonna be worse? My mama's 6'1". She ain't no small woman. I'd rather stand up them 7 motherfuckers that trying to jump me than that swooping from her.
I'm asking must have hurt. I ain't going home with that shit.
And I used to be a bad kid back in the day. Like, it was to the point where I was immune to them. I was immune. My mom would literally sit there and whoop me, and I wouldn't even be fazed. That was when I was back in the city, like, them environments. But when I changed and when I got to a new environment, all that shit changed. Them feelings came back. But it got to a point, like I said, fast forward, I started unpacking stuff. So we went through 4 sessions. I literally, in 4 sessions, I logged 21 hours with this dude. 4 sessions.
Because you've been holding on to a lot.
And every time I released energy, I was able to sit up here and went from this to sitting up here to sitting up here till I could look at this man in the eye. I could look this man in the eye. By the time we was done with the last session, I could look this man in the eye. And at this point, I got that pop against me, back to me now. Like, and I got that energy or whatnot. It's like, cause you unloaded so much. And I didn't even realize all the stuff that I was unloading.
Man, listen, I remember I went through a tough period. It was probably like 2000, Tyson's, trying to calculate my son's age as to the time when I was going through what I was going through. But it was a real dark period of time. And I'm talking about, it seemed like, for me, I felt like the time was, it felt like maybe 2 or 3 months, but it was a real year passed, a whole year. And during that time, and now in hindsight, I look back on the events. I'm like, oh, I do remember that happened on New Year's Eve. I remember, you know, them, the different medications that I was, you know, trying, and the different things that I was trying to figure out. But I think ultimately for me, I remember at the time I was living on like Santa Monica and Brockton, like on the west side, right? Sort of near Interscope and all of that. And I remember a friend of mine came and took me to the beach, and then they left actually. I was just like, yo, can you drop me off at the beach? And I took the stairs down and I walked to the edge of the ocean, and I'll never forget, I literally looked up in the air and I was like, I don't know what this is, but this don't belong to me. I gotta give it back to the universe. And that was the start of me healing. Like, I think that's the other thing, like you say, unpacking. We hold on to so much, whether we would be cognizant of it or not. And we have to be willing to do the necessary work to keep ourselves here, so we can be here for our children, so we can be here for our community, so we can be here for our significant others, and also so that we can be beacons for other people and everything. And that's the other thing. Yeah, sick, the beacon tattoo. Real talk, because we're you know, because these conversations are very vulnerable. Like, we do this, and me personally, I do this to be of service. So I'm not gonna be on here and not, I'm gonna use my experience, because it's easy to like point to someone else or point to other things, because that makes it easy for us. We don't wanna touch certain things. But I'm at a place where at my life that if you can hear what I'm saying and it is able to help you start to unravel some of these things and find peace or find the steps towards peace, then I'm all with it. And I think that's where, you know, humbly, that's where I think we should all be, you know. So I appreciate you guys being so candid. Transparent is a word that everybody's using now, and sharing with us. And that's all this about. I want us to, you know, even after this show, like,
man, that's I could go into a whole
but that's the thing. Even after this, we should continue to fellowship or whatever you want to call it, because people need our help.
We need each other.
Like, community is fucking so important.
Yeah, it takes
a, you know what I mean? It takes a community to raise a village. It takes a community to raise a man. Like, you get to a certain point, you're like, I'm a man. Like, I got all the answers. No, you fucking don't. You don't never have all the answers. The moment you think that is the moment that you've cursed yourself. The moment that you think that, you've cursed yourself. We don't have all the answers.
And you limit yourself from the potential that you can go to.
Yes. Think of those moments. I bet you got a moment where you were like, I'm so afraid of this. And then you went through the process and you on the other side of it and you're like, that's all the fuck I had to do?
Yeah, it's everything. Yeah. Every single thing I've done in life and been good at.
Right?
It's every single thing. Yeah. Each day I have other things, of course, I want to accomplish. But for the things I have done, from doing a podcast, even being like, oh, I got to do a podcast now. I want this podcast. It took me 3 years. My podcast partner asked me for 3 years to do it with him. And I was like, bro, I ain't trying to get in the podcast space. Everybody's in the podcast. And then we did it. And it was really just a fear of mine, just being like, you got to watch this thing on your own. Motherfuckers don't care what you're talking about. What if it's not good? What if it's this? What is that? And then you do it, and you're like, what? Like, of course I should have been doing this. This is my truth. This is the, you know, it's the journey. It's what you're supposed to be going through and feeling. You should feel those things. And it's the anxiety you feel because you care. You know what I'm saying? It's the anxiety that you feel about caring about anything. You
want
it to be good.
It's not because you're vain.
No.
It's because you do care.
Yeah, you care.
Like, yo, I wanna. That us. We were talking about it. We want to add substance to the space. I'm not saying that other people don't. I would never say anything. I'm saying we want to make sure that that's what we do.
Right.
Authentically add substance to the space. If not, we're an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to be an echo chamber. You know what I mean? And, you know, again, thank you guys for coming on here. Because, like, we talked to a bunch of people. There are going to be a bunch of, there have been, the past guests have been amazing. You guys are being amazing. But we always say, like, I was talking to a record label and I was just like, yo, I want you to have a couple guests on. Oh, well, you know, they're not on album cycle. They don't have to be on album cycle. I'm not talking about the album. I'm not talking about the video. I'm not talking about promo. I'm talking about life. And life is happening every day. I don't need you to be on here because you're dropping a single. You know what I'm saying? Because you're just going to say to me what you're going to say to the other 5-10 things that you're on prior to me or after me. And I don't need that. What I want from you is your most authentic self when you're in between, when you're actually creating the art. Because it's the moments in between where we're creating the art where we're the most open and free and, like, got these things going. So, again, thank you guys so, so, so much for joining us in Let's if nothing else, man, let's continue to, like, be here for each other, like conversate and talk to each other. That's what we're doing this for, again, to build community.
Nah, I'm loving it. Like, that's me, I do that all the time. And like, I like these type of venues and event spaces, like for me, sharing your stories, like, cause people, we all go through stuff, man.
Yes.
And we all got different stories. We all got different pathways. He went leap of faith. And look where he at now.
Super leap of faith.
Like, that's people need to hear that, because there's so many more or less like him that holding on to that fear, like, man, I don't know, like.
We ain't talking about hooping or.
Exactly.
You talking about, yo, I'm going to Hollywood. I'm going to LA to just see what the fuck is going to happen.
Well,
I'm going to make something shake.
The funniest thing is, I would tell people in Chicago, though, yeah, I'm gonna be out there. I won't be back. I was talking shit, kinda. I was like, yeah, I'm about to move to LA, man, make it big. He's like, what you gonna do out there? I'm like, I don't know yet. I'm gonna
figure it out.
And I figured it out.
But nah, but those are the conversations that help, that somebody at the crib, and I read the comments that, you know, when we post these things, and there's always a ton of comments of people saying, I needed this conversation. And it's important. It's one thing to hear it from, like, family members and those things, but I think for a lot of the youth and other people to hear, from people that they respect and they've seen their accomplishment, to peel back the curtain a little bit, to be like, yo, they went through the same thing, a lot of the same things you might be going through, and you keep going.
Like every year I do my thing since I started like giving back. I got my foundation, Allergic to Failure.
Allergic to Failure.
That's my life mantra. Like, because everything that I went through has prepared me for the next step. You're not gonna figure it out. I literally, from high school, middle school, high school, college, I've only heard, you can't, you won't, you're not good enough, you're not gonna last. I'm the first to graduate. I graduated high school.
First to graduate your family?
No. I'm just saying, I graduated high school. People told me I wasn't gonna graduate.
Okay.
I'm the first to graduate college in my family. I set the standard for my brothers. Both of my brothers, HBCU graduates. One has his master's. Other's working on his master's. Year 10 in the league. These people told me I wouldn't even sit up here and make it a season.
10 years.
And now to be one of the most sought out players for the last 5 years. Every team said they could use a guy like me on their team. And I literally could go anywhere and fit any system. Mm-hmm. The same player that they said that doesn't have a position, now what is the NBA?
Positionless.
Right?
Crazy.
Right?
So it's about staying consistent and just keep
believing.
Keep believing and keep working. Because now, small ball center. Mm-hmm. I ain't played center since I was high school, my freshman year. Sophomore year, I'm sorry, and I moved to forward. Then when I got to college, I played the 4 or 5 at times, depending on what lineup we went to. But I mostly played the 4. I played 2 through 4 in the first year. Then I went to 5 my freshman year, because my coach kicked our whole junior class off the team because they broke team rules. Like, people don't understand, it's layers to the story. It's layers, and I share these with kids back home that, bro, it don't matter your circumstance. I grew up in the same environment as y'all. I grew up in the same environment. You dictate your future. Your environment doesn't dictate your future. Like I said, with that kid that got shot 5 times, we sat after my camp for 4 hours talking to this kid. Not just me, but all my homies. And everybody, like, my brother told him flat out, look, either you gonna get with it or you gonna get down. One of the two. You gonna be persistent in this? Where you gonna get down? One of the two. Ain't no all listen to all this stuff. Bro, either you gonna do it or you not gonna do it. You gonna sit up here and take the initiative. You can't let your circumstances, okay, your mom ain't work, your mom this and that. You ain't gotta go be in the streets to sit up here and go fucking make some money. Get a job. Use basketball as a tool. Use it as a tool. Get your grades up, go to college. You can go make some money overseas. It's sacrifices that you gotta take. It's sacrifices, because literally everybody sit up and be like, man, you went to college, isn't it? I ain't never worked a day in my life. I ain't never had a job. And I ain't have it like that. my other homeboys, they get per diem. They get the what's the name? The what's the checks that they get from school? The
right now?
When they get the
stipend.
Yeah, the stipend checks. I ain't get none of that. My parents made too much money, so I didn't get the fruits of the school giving me back money. I literally got all that stuff from my family, so I had to learn how to appreciate what I have. And I sit up and tell kids all the time, it don't matter about how much you have. It's about what you do with what you have. That's what matters the most. Because literally, I'm in this position, but I still act like I don't have it like that. It's that humbleness that's in me that's been instilled from my parents, my grandparents. Because it's longevity. You want this to last. You don't want to just live in it right now because it's going to run out at some point. This window that I have, it's going to run out at some point. But what do you do within that window?
I don't know if it runs out. I think it'll run out if we don't figure out a way to reinvent yourself or just pivot.
No, I'm talking about the way of playing.
Oh, like, yeah.
The playing aspect. But then the next phase is what you take into accountability, because that's where a lot of people go wrong at. You sit up here and you play basketball for this amount of time.
Our producer telling us we got to rap. He looking like, you got to rap. I'm sorry. One thing before we go, the word is legacy. What does it mean to you? Give us a couple. Legacy.
It means my name. Hey, you know, and that's everything to me, my name.
Legacy to me is your purpose and what you do with it.
Legacy is, wow. Legacy for me is actually, I want my children and my family, you know, everybody, my wife, I want them to know that, well, they do know. I want them to know I put it all on the line. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. For the betterment of not just myself, but a community. Like a community, the betterment of the community. If people see in me that, yo, it was about more than him. That's what I want.
Yeah.
That's what I want it to be.
Yeah.
About more than me.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all those things, because I think when you think of legacy, it's when your name is brought up, what do people say about you?
For sure.
Whether you're alive or dead, in the room or out the room, that's what legacy is, right?
There it is. Thank you. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Sweet life. Steve Lowe.